So my name is James. I am the campus ministry director here at UCM, and I was reflecting. I was thinking about this time of year for myself when I was your age, and I was working on a Bachelor of Business Administration in Manitoba. If you live in Manitoba, give me a shout out. There it is. Yes. That's Megan. She's from Manitoba. And I stumbled upon a group very similar to this. It was not as big as this group. I was a new follower of Jesus. Just a couple years earlier, I'd grown up in the church, but really a couple years earlier is when it kind of came together for me. I had accepted Jesus into my life. But to be honest, when I entered into university, I hadn't yet figured out how I was going to live a life following Jesus, right? And do you understand the difference? Like there's a difference between saying yes and accepting something and then actually following through with it. Like how many of you have signed up for an 8 o'clock class? So lots of you signed up for it, but how many are going to follow through with getting up at 8 o'clock? Oh, good, yes, good, good. All right. Woo! That joke didn't land so well because you guys are such keeners. You're like, of course I'm going to get up at 8 o'clock. All right, okay. Well, that is a big part of why UCM is here, right on the campus, because we want to be a loving community that helps you follow through with following Jesus, especially in this season of life while at university. So we are an on-campus Christian community. We're a campus ministry, and we meet every Thursday night because we just really believe that, from the model of the early church, we're meant to get together as believers and encourage one another. And if you haven't yet kind of stepped into this thing, this following Jesus thing, that's okay. This is part of it, and you're welcome to come and journey and learn and grow and figure all that out. This month, we're tackling a series we're calling Soul Care. And how many of you were at our barbecue last week? Oh, good, Manny. All right. How many of you, be bold, how many of you first time to UCM tonight? First time. All right. Great to see you. Woo! So I'm going to help catch you up just a little bit so you don't feel left out. So last week, I just had a short message on soul care, and I was trying to set up our series. And last week, I mentioned that there's a lot of talk in our culture about self-care. Self-care. And you hear phrases like, take care of yourself, believe in yourself, express yourself, be yourself, right? But what if yourself is a train wreck? What if the more obsessed we are with ourselves, the more we actually can neglect our souls? And so that's the big idea of this series, is that when we're not centered in Jesus, our soul cries out in distress. So how do we take care of our souls? Well, anytime you want to take care of something, you have to understand it. So whether that's learning about a goldfish and how to feed that goldfish, or whether you're learning, what do you own again? It's a Honda Civic? Yeah, it's a Honda Civic? Yeah. Yeah, so whether you own a Honda Civic and you need to figure out why it's leaking oil all over your driveway, you need to understand it. That was just a random illustration out of the air that wasn't personal at all. So if you want to understand how to care for something, then you have to understand it. And so that's why last week I started talking about, well, what is a soul? What makes up a soul? How do we understand what our soul is? And last week, you might remember, I held up a big dartboard. And I said, our soul is kind of like the concentric circles in this dartboard. You can put up that first slide. It's there. Great. And I talked about how we have a will. At the center of who we are, we have a will. And that will tries to choose and make decisions of who we are and what we're going to do. And we have a mind, right? And in the ancient way, a mind was also, it kind of encompassed both our thoughts and our feelings. And we all have a body. And our body is kind of where our will reigns, where our thoughts and our actions can be acted out, right? And what I said was our soul is what integrates all the parts of our life. Our soul is our capacity to integrate all the parts of our lives. And so our soul integrates our intentions and our thoughts and our feelings and our values, our facial expressions, our body language. All of that adds up to our life. And a soul is healthy when it's well ordered. A soul is healthy when there is harmony between all these entities of who we are. But most importantly, it's healthy when it's aligned with what God intends for us and for the world. And so last week I quoted from Jesus's one of his really famous sayings. Jesus said, "What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet lose their soul?" Jesus is warning us we can lose our soul. Now, maybe not in the way that you lose your car keys. That was in my notes. I wasn't actually. I didn't know you lost your car keys. I didn't know that. I wasn't there. So good thing you can't lose your soul like some people lose their car keys. But what Jesus means by losing our soul is when our souls get out of whack, when we get out of whack, when if they become unhealthy, when our souls kind of get disintegrated. So what causes this? What causes disintegration? Well, tonight I want to talk to you a bit about two other entities that impact our soul, and that's the relationships that we engage in the environments that we find ourselves in. And so as I mentioned earlier, our world has replaced the word soul with the word self. And those aren't the same. Soul and self are not the same. And the danger is when we actually focus more on ourselves, we can actually neglect our souls. So let me read you, let me share with you a couple stories. I have four stories to share with you. The first one is by an alumni student, and we'll call him Will. And Will writes, "I really looked forward to going to university. I found high school homework easy. I knew university would bring the challenge I was looking for. I took all the hard sciences, but I found I really excelled in math and physics. I concentrated most of my focus and energy on getting not only the best grades in my class, but honestly, I was starting to become the best in my year. For most of my life, I've been able to achieve the goals I've been striving for. Some of my friends have nicknamed me Bootstraps because I seem to always be able to pull myself up. You can laugh at that. By my bootstraps. By my third year, professors were asking me to be their TA, which felt good. But what I was really hoping for is to be asked to do an honors degree. Well, that came next. And when I graduated from university, I had two significant offers. I could go on and do a PhD, but also TELUS recruited me with a starting salary of $75,000. Well, that seemed too good to pass up coming straight out of university. So I took the job. But it's a year later now, and I'm starting to wonder if I made the right decision. I sort of have accomplished everything I was working towards, but now what? Kind of feels like that U2 song. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Maybe I'll buy a condo this year." Second story, girl named Cynthia. She says, "I've always found making friends easy. I don't mean to brag, but I'm pretty likable and fun. So I didn't join UCM because I'm lonely or something. It's more like I know being a part of this would be good for me. Plus, for the first time in a while, I'm taking a break from dating. In high school, I always had a boyfriend. But boyfriends aren't serious in high school. It's just fun. Yeah, it's just fun to have someone to do stuff with. And like I said, I'm pretty likable, so I never found it hard not to have a boyfriend. Plus, my mom always is working, and my dad is not around, so it's nice to have someone who has a car." She's pretty honest, eh? You know what I mean? But like I said, I'm now at university, and I think my next relationship will be a bit more serious, so I'm going to take a break for now. But you never know. Third story. A guy named Bodie. He says, I think what I appreciated most about UCM was having a place to serve. I enjoyed being behind the scenes kind of guy. Because I owned a truck, it just made sense to help every week with transportation. I know you'd always ask me, I know you always told me I didn't have to do it every week, but it makes me feel useful. But since I left university, I don't have the same opportunity to be involved somewhere, at least not to the same degree. But hey, I wanted to tell you something. You know how I've been feeling kind of empty? I never told you that I had this bad habit of staying up late and binge-watching videos and stuff, like till really late. In fact, I would often wake up the next morning and my laptop was still playing. Anyways, that all changed recently. I didn't think the lack of sleep was actually affecting me, but since I've stopped doing that, I've had more energy, and to be honest, I've noticed I'm able to be a better friend to others. I'm generally more positive about life. And yeah, I'm actually reading my Bible more. Who would have thought taking sleep a bit more seriously would affect that? Fourth story. Guy named Buddy. He says, hey, my name is Buddy. That's my Canadian name. I didn't find UCM until my second year. In my first year, I just stayed in my dorm room a lot and slept a lot. I still sleep a lot. But one of my RAs talked to me about being homesick and encouraged me to get out more. Anyways, that was about when someone on my floor invited me to UCM core group. In a lot of ways, it has been a lifesaver. I guess I didn't realize how important friendships are to my well-being. In our study of the book of John, I learned that Jesus came to give life and life abundant. And I want to live that way. Thanks again for all your work on campus. I'm sorry I don't come every week. I'll try better next year. So how do we know when we're starting to lose our souls? Even though our culture doesn't talk much about our soul, our language often reveals it in our unconscious ways. So we say things like, I feel like my life is falling apart. I just can't get myself together. I feel like I'm coming apart at the seams. A lost soul is not about us going to heaven or hell. A lost soul is a diagnosis, not a destination. And our soul is unhealthy when we exclude God's invitation from parts of who we are. You know how we do that? We can kind of compartmentalize our lives. We only let him into certain spheres. Like when we look to bend the world to our will instead of looking and seeking God's will. Like the guy or the girl whose feelings are only focused on finding someone to be in a romantic relationship with. Or like when we think the answer is serving more and more and more until we're exhausted and burnt out. And we don't pay attention to our thoughts or our feelings. And we're not inviting Jesus into all aspects of who we are. Attending the soul, it doesn't mean we need to neglect the practical things in our lives. Like we can strive for achievements. We can desire to discover a romantic relationship. It doesn't mean you can't ask, how can I be the top of my class? But instead, it means we need to learn how your involvement in each areas of your life is marking your soul. Because as I said, our souls encompass all of who we are. So one of the biggest challenges you guys are going to face in this season of life while you're here at university is that, honestly, this environment doesn't teach you to pay attention to what is most important. Often we're told experiences is what university life is about. Sure, but what kind of experiences? which ones are good for my soul and which ones are bad for my soul. Maybe you've been told volunteering in an extracurricular activities is what you should do. Pad that resume, get those experiences. But which activities, which volunteering, which clubs, what is going to lead to developing you into becoming the kind of person you're meant to be? And so Jesus told a story about this. It's a familiar story. And he tells this story about different kinds of soil. And he says, a farmer went out to sow seed. And as he was scattering the seed fell into different kinds of soils. Some fell along the path, some fell on rocky places, and some fell among thorns. But finally, some fell on good soil. And it grew and produced a crop, multiplying some 30, 60, even 100 times. Now, a lot of the time when we're reading the Gospels and Jesus' stories and Jesus' parables, he doesn't always unpack them. He leaves them for us to figure out. But this one in particular, he explains. It's that important. It's so important he wants to make sure we know exactly what he means by this parable. And so what helps us first is what's constant in this parable. First, the seed is constant. The story isn't about good seed and bad seed. The seed will take root, given half a chance. And the seed is Jesus' word. The seed is the message about the kingdom that Jesus came proclaiming. The seed is the gospel, his word. And notice what else is constant. The sower is constant. It isn't, hey, is he a good sower or is he a bad sower? The sower, what we know about him is he's generous. He spreads the seed everywhere. He's generous. He's inclusive. And the sower is God. God doesn't choose some people and others. He is generous and he spreads the seed everywhere. But what isn't constant is the soil. For those who are in stats, we call that a variable, right? No, my stats joke didn't land either. Shoot. Is that a math joke? Is it a calc joke? Algebra joke? There we go. Thank you. So, and the point that Jesus is making is that the soils are our soul. And so he says, first, there's hardened soil. And that's when we have hardened souls. So just like the soil on the path can get hard and dry and pounded over time, so too our souls can get that way. And sometimes our souls have been hardened because of the hurts in our lives. They've gotten hard in an attempt to protect ourselves from others. Sometimes it's fear of being rejected, fear of looking foolish, fear of getting hurt, fear of broken pride. But a soul can be saved when the soil gets receptive. Second soil he talks about is shallow soil. And he says some of the seed fell on rocky soil, meaning that there's only a thin layer of soil. Richard Foster in one of his books says, superficiality is the curse of our age. The desperate need of the soul is not for more intelligence, more talent, more excitement, but more depth. Like Psalm 42 says, as a deer panteth for the water, for the streams of water, so my soul pants for you. Deep calls to deep in the roar of your waterfalls. And so Jesus explains, he says, since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. How is it going to go for you this year? How is it going to go when the rubber hits the road? When pressures mount? When challenges come your way? Do you have a thin layer right now? Is your soul a thin layer of soil? And then the third thing he says is he talks about the cluttered soil. He says, some seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked out the plant. And Jesus explains that what he means by that is he's talking about the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and the desires of things that come in and choke out the word, making it unfruitful. Man, university time can bring a lot of worries, doesn't it? A lot of anxieties. The university ethos kind of dangles this carrot of like wealth and success and achievement. If you succeed here, you're going to succeed in life, right? That's the end goal. Any of you have been in party culture here on campus? Don't put up your hand. Party culture will rise up and you will see desires and temptations that will choke you out. Somebody said a long time ago, they said, if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. And I think that's the biggest temptation we can have. We can so easily mistake a busy life for a full life. A cluttered life actually might be the most dangerous thing of all because it's so subtle. I'm so busy, I don't have time for that. I'm so busy, I can't go to that. I'm so busy, I don't even have time to pray. Really? That's how busy your life is. I think for many of us, if we cease to be busy, we wonder, well, then who are we? If we aren't the things that we're doing, do we even matter? But the good news is that Jesus talks about good soil. And he says good soil is receptive soil. The seed's constant, the sower's constant, the soil is variable. And Jesus isn't saying, hey, what type of soil are you? Because guess what? We are all these types of soils, depending on the state of our soul, right? We've all had times when we're shallow. We've all had times when when our hearts have gotten hardened. We have all had times when we clutter our life too much, right? And so Jesus says we need to be receptive soil. We need to be a receptive person, receptive to his good news, and when that's where the seed will grow. So Jesus is encouraging you to be receptive, to open your soul to the living God, to open yourself up to a relationship with Jesus, to open your soul to the moving and activity of the Holy Spirit in your life. If you look at that next slide, Gavin, when Jesus enters into all of who we are, he gives us faith to be able to live this stuff out. So what does it take for us, for our souls to be saved? Jesus says being receptive to the seed will actually demand something of you. That's why when he walked around and shared his message, there were some who thought it was too hard. His sayings were too hard. This life is too hard. And so just above that verse that I quoted earlier is a very important line for us to hear. And you can go to this verse too, Gavin. He says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. How can our souls be saved? Jesus says that it starts with this practice called discipleship. Learning to live our lives like Jesus would live them if he were us. Learning to be like Jesus, to be discipled by him, to submit our entire lives to him. And so that's why I need to update our little diagram with one more element, and that's the element of relationships. Jesus once said, Jesus was once asked, someone came to him and said, teacher, and he'd been answering some questions and he gave some really great answers. And so someone thought, I'm gonna ask him the biggest, most important question. And he said, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Of all the commandments, what is the most important one? And Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment, singular, greater than these, plural. See what he did there? So when he was asked, what is the greatest commandment of all the 666 commandments in the Old Testament, Jesus quotes from the Shema. And the Shema was something, a passage in the Old Testament in Deuteronomy, that they would pray every day, that every Jew knew from infancy. Every devout Jew from Jesus' day to ours prays this prayer every single day. And so for Jesus to say, hey, the most important commandment is to love God, wasn't a surprise to them. But for him to add on, the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. That would have been a little bit of a surprise. For Jesus, he can't help but pair these two things together. Loving God, loving others. Loving God, loving others. Loving others, loving God. They're inseparable. John, in his book, in 1 John, explains, if we say we love God, yet hate brother or sister, we are liars. For if we do not love a fellow believer whom we have seen, we cannot love God whom we have not seen. And he has given us this command, those who love God must also love one another. So Jesus is saying you can't separate these two. It's one of the greatest litmus tests of being a true follower of Jesus, is do you not only love God, but love others. So how can you care for your soul this school year? Well, I would say pay attention to the environments you're placing yourself in. And I would say pay attention to the relationships that you're building. But most importantly, I would invite you to develop this, you know, followership of Jesus. Invite Jesus into every part of who you are so that we can live lives in response to his will in his world. Amen? Amen.